Jackson, W266, DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
AP News. I'm Ed Donahue. The Russian Defense Ministry says it shot down Ukrainian drones that attacked two Russian air bases, and three Russian servicemen were killed by debris in the assaults.
Reports from Russian media say explosions have rocked two air bases in the country, one of them housing nuclear-capable strategic bombers that have been involved in strikes against Ukraine. Neither Ukrainian nor Russian authorities have commented on the possible cause of the blasts. When asked whether President Vladimir Putin had been briefed about one of the bases, explosions, Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov said that the president is being regularly informed about ongoing developments. This comes as many Western nations have enacted a $60 per barrel cap on the price they will pay for Russian crude oil, part of efforts to put a financial squeeze on Moscow over Russia's nine-month-old invasion of Ukraine. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
A serial killer known as the Torso Killer admitted to killing a 23-year-old woman outside a Long Island shopping mall in 1968 and four other women decades ago. Richard Cottenham was arraigned earlier this year on a second-degree murder charge. Appearing virtually from a New Jersey prison for the New York hearing, Cottenham was sentenced to 25 years to life behind bars. Jurors started deliberating in the Trump Organization's criminal tax fraud trial, weighing charges former President Donald Trump's company helped executives dodge personal income taxes on perks such as Manhattan apartments and luxury cars. North Korea fired about 130 artillery rounds into the water near its western and eastern sea borders with South Korea, the latest military action contributing to worsening relations between the neighbors. A hospital in Memphis says it paused, not stopped, its gender-affirming services in response to possible legal action by civil rights advocates who argue the hospital's move is illegal and discriminatory. This is AP News.
We tried Dynavite Nutritional Supplement, and after a couple of weeks, we noticed a big difference. Our little Gizmo's coat was shinier, and there was a lot less scratching and shedding.
My dog smelled and scratched constantly. We bathed and sprayed her, took her to the vet, but no results. Now, a little Dynavite in her food helps Bella keep her beautiful coat with no scratching or smell.
Happier, healthier with every bite. Over a million pets helped with Dynavite.
Looking for the perfect gift? Get him a shirt from Untuckit. Untuckit shirts are designed to be worn untucked. They're the easiest way to keep him looking sharp and feeling comfortable. You can't go wrong with their super soft flannels, wrinkle-free shirts, performance shirts with stretch, and cozy sweaters that are all perfect for right now. They even have a line for her. Find the perfect gift for every guy on your list at one of 80-plus Untuckit stores or at Untuckit.com. Untuckit, shirts designed to be worn.
Women hear a lot about self-care these days. Advice on ways to relax, exercise, eat healthy, and more. Those are all great. But one of the most important self-care steps we can take is making sure we're financially secure later in life. That means saving money for retirement. It's never too late to start. And it's the kind of self-care that brings peace of mind that lasts. For small steps you can take to save for retirement, visit WeSaySaveIt.org. That's WeSaySaveIt.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
Hey, this is Matt from Design Garden. Remember when the internet was new? Back then you had to leave your house to start a business. Companies used to pay programmers bags of cash to get online. Now, small businesses can get online with a Facebook business page, or Squarespace, or Google My Business, or WordPress. But which tools should you use? Can you afford to go down the wrong path? Design Garden uses modern tools to build your website the right way. Find us online at design.garden. Again, that's design.garden.
Charged, never convicted. The Devil's Advocates.
Jim Santel for just a few more minutes. As you point out, this is a civil trial, not a criminal trial. You think that the Trump org will end up with the death penalty under New York law.
Letitia James, she's doing a civil case, right? This is a criminal matter.
Oh, it is. So I misunderstood.
It is, yes.
Normally, so I leave the being wrong to Dom.
Right?
Listen Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. for the Devil's Advocates radio show.
Veterans, whatever you're going through, don't wait. Reach out. Find resources at va.gov/reach. That's va.gov/reach. Brought to you by the United States Department of Veterans Affairs and the Ad Council.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matner with your headlines. The bill to avert a rail strike passed the Senate last week on a vote of 80-15, but Wisconsin senators have different views on what happened. While ultimately approving the measure, Democratic Senator Tammy Baldwin said she would have preferred a deal that ensured rail workers get 7 days of sick leave. That failed, 52-43. Republican Senator Ron Johnson voting against it, but he did vote to approve the final measure, says though he would rather have extended a cooling-off period, which would have forced both sides back to negotiate. That effort failed with a 25-70 vote. Baldwin says Congress needing to weigh in on the measure was a direct result of the greed of the railroads and their Wall Street backers. Johnson said Democrats are playing politics and didn't believe Congress should insert itself between private companies and their workforce. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK, 540 AM.
As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry is an independent product and has a joint sales agreement with Civic Media. Enjoy!
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. Thanks for joining us today during your lunch hour. As always, you can join the conversation at 844-967-2789. So last week, my mom was supposed to do a girls' trip with her four best friends, and they were going to go to Cedarburg, and the day before they're supposed to go, one of the friends had to report that at their Thanksgiving big family event, over half of the people who were there had either influenza, COVID, or RSV when they were all together, and the friend said, Do you want me to come, as a very thoughtful way of saying, do we want to spend this time together? I feel fine right now, but the likelihood that I am carrying something now is very high. And so they unfortunately canceled their trip. But it was a reminder that right now there is a triple threat of so many viruses running around, whether it's influenza, RSV, and COVID, and so apparently at higher levels than we typically see this time of year. So to walk us through it is President and CEO of the Medical College of Wisconsin, Dr. John Raymond. Welcome to the show, Dr. Raymond.
Yeah, thank you, Kristen. Glad to be here.
So I feel like for a month or so now, we've been seeing so many kids are sick. Hospitals are starting to run out, especially because they're respiratory viruses. And so what is kind of where are we right now in Wisconsin as far as how either overloaded hospitals are, but how many cases we're seeing? And is this abnormal?
What we're facing right now is not typical. We have a steady but high level of COVID with a manageable number of hospitalizations. But when you superimpose on that a rapidly rising early flu season and an earlier than usual and more severe respiratory syncytial virus season, both pediatric and adult hospitals are filling up with people that have respiratory symptoms. These are three very different viruses, but they manifest in very similar ways. Okay. Cough, fever, constitutional symptoms, and in some cases, severe problems with shortness of breath. That COVID predominantly now is affecting people over the age of 70. There's been a threefold increase in hospitalizations in California and New Mexico, so we expect that there probably will be something similar happening here. RSV may have peaked, but it is a very significant respiratory virus that affects the elderly and kids. And flu, obviously, is just starting to peak now, or starting to rise now.
And so, do they all spread in the same way?
Essentially, yes, Kristen. Okay. So these viruses, even though they have similar symptoms, they may have different physiologies, but they spread in the same way. So respiratory spread is the most common, but also spread through contact on touch surfaces can happen, especially with flu and RSV, a respiratory syncytial virus. So the things that we recommend people do, other than staying away from people that are obviously sick, or if you're sick, staying away from other folks, is to wash your hands, socially distance, or wear a mask if you're around vulnerable people. And for all three viruses, the elderly are vulnerable. people that have immunocompromised, maybe from cancer or from rheumatological diseases, also are at high risk. And then for flu and RSV, kids also are very susceptible.
And so what is it, because is if for kids, is it more likely going to be influenza than RSV because, like you said, the COVID is still predominantly affecting older people?
Yeah, COVID is infecting everybody, but the disease manifestations are more severe in older people.
Okay.
Kids are still getting infected with COVID. Just looking at the hospital censuses, there's about five times more kids hospitalized with RSV right now than with COVID, and maybe twice as many with rhinovirus as with COVID. So we still have some COVID, but some of these other viruses are causing more hospitalizations in kids.
We're talking to Dr. Raymond, who is the CEO and president of the Medical College of Wisconsin, about the mixed bag of influenza, RSV, and COVID. And so obviously this is also on top of shortages in hospitals. And so how are different hospitals being able to manage this this uptick in cases? And I guess even more importantly, knowing that there is a shortage of workers, at what point would you advise people that the symptoms are severe enough to go to the hospital versus what can be done at home?
Right. Well, obviously you want to consult with your doctor, but if a child or an adult is short of breath, if they have a high fever, if they're very profoundly weak, then obviously they need to be seen. And typically that would either be in an urgent care or an emergency department. So I wouldn't change the way that the threshold that people have for seeking medical help. But we do want to do everything we can, not just to protect each other, but to make sure that our hospitals don't get overwhelmed. So the usual things that we've talked about, hand washing, socially distancing, avoiding interacting with sick people, protecting the vulnerable, those are things that we should be thinking about, especially around the holiday season. And we have seen a very significant spike in respiratory diseases that have happened within a week or so after Thanksgiving.
Dr. Raymond, I had a friend who was visiting from Texas a couple of weeks before Thanksgiving, and she actually had influenza A. I didn't realize that there was an A and a B, and she was really, really sick.
Yeah, influenza A typically causes more significant symptoms, but there are two major strains, A and B, and the vaccines that we roll out every year are typically tailored to what the scientists believe would be the most likely strains of A and B that would be circulating.
And so as far as why we're kind of seeing all of this at the same time, is there any reason to think that it was because of the last 2 years around this time, it was only COVID? And is there a different immunity that's changed in when we were isolating versus when we're not? Or is there any kind of leading theories as to why all three of these things are so prevalent at the same time right now?
Right. Well, there's certainly a lot of theories about what masking and isolation may have done to immunity from non-COVID diseases. But I think the most likely thing that's happening here is people are tired of being apart, and they're mixing and intermingling with each other in normal ways, pre-pandemic ways. And that's just given these respiratory viruses an opportunity to spread maybe a little earlier and a little bit more severely than we would have in a typical season.
In some ways, it's almost like we have collective amnesia as far as what happened. And everyone was so good originally about stay home if you're sick, don't go to work. Work doesn't want you to come to work if you're sick. And I just think too, Dr. Raymond, it seems like we've all kind of forgotten about all of that.
Yeah, let's face it. People are tired of isolation. They're tired of wearing masks. They're tired of doing all these things to mitigate the risk of COVID. But these measures also work very well for other common viruses. And I don't think people understand influenza in a bad season can kill 50,000 people in the U.S. Respiratory syncytial virus kills 14,000 adults every year and 500 kids. So these are still very significant problems. And this isn't really the time for us to go completely back to our pre-pandemic habits. A little bit of precaution is really warranted right now, especially with the cold weather and with people getting together for the holidays.
And so obviously, I would imagine that your recommendation beyond what you said, washing your hands, wearing a mask if you're not feeling well, socially distance, is getting vaccinated if you're not vaccinated, and boosters if you need boosters for both influenza and COVID. And I also, I'm assuming, because I haven't heard anything, there's not a vaccination for RSV.
That's right, Kristen. No vaccine for RSV yet. And yes, the vast majority of medical professionals are recommending that people get vaccinated, both for seasonal influenza and for COVID, especially if you're in a vulnerable population or you live or work with vulnerable people. So these new bivalent boosters for COVID do give what appears to be a stronger immunity to the new strains of the virus that are circulating, the Omicron variants that are more contagious. And especially if you're in a high-risk group, we are recommending that you receive a vaccination. But obviously, if you have concerns about vaccine safety, talk to your doctor.
What are our vaccination numbers in Wisconsin, Dr. Raymond?
They're lower than we'd like. They're at about 67%. For people that have had at least one vaccine against COVID, and about 37% for people that have gotten one booster. So obviously not optimal. We'd like to see more people get vaccinated.
And so just as a reminder, as we get people get sick, and so the once you are sick, don't go to work, wash your hands, wear a mask. But as far as kind of that in-between level of when we get sick, and it's not so bad that we are going to go to the hospital, does NyQuil work? Like for the over-the-counter stuff, when you are feeling bad as a doctor, what do you recommend to make yourself feel better with what we probably blanketly call a cold?
Like everybody else, I'll take an analgesic or a cold medicine if I want to feel better. So symptomatic management is good for these respiratory viruses. One of the problems is we are seeing some shortages of both over-the-counter and prescription medication associated with our disrupted supply chain.
Well, great.
I was hoping you were going to suggest a brandy hot toddy, but maybe that's just me.
That's all right. Home remedies are okay if they work for you.
Whatever you got to do to come to work, Jane. Well, is there any other advice you would give to people in our audience as far as what to look out for or how to stay healthy?
There are two things. If you are diagnosed with influenza early and you're in a high-risk group, you can be prescribed Tamiflu. It does reduce the symptoms and the severity of illness. And the same would go for COVID. We do have Paxlovid, which if you can take it early, does lower the risk of severe disease and lower the risk of death and hospitalization. So again, get diagnosed early and make yourself available for these medications that can prevent severe illness.
Well, that is great to hear. Thank you so much for spending time with us today. Our guest has been Dr. John Raymond, who is the CEO and president of the Medical College of Wisconsin. Thank you so much for joining us, and thank you for all that you do.
Thanks, Kristen. Thanks, Jane. Have a great day.
You too. All right. Well, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, some more Twitter drama, because that seems never ending. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
This local musical interlude is brought to you by Max Inc. Radio. Kelsey Miles. Listen to Max Inc. Radio every Saturday and Sunday, 6 p.m. to midnight. Download the podcast at maxincradio.com. We are local music.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
Text and work. Text and pretend to work. Text and act surprised when someone calls you out for not working.
Who, me?
Text and whatever, just don't text and drive. Visit stoptextsstoprex.org. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Fear you may be missing out? We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. Enjoy listening live or catch up by finding the podcast at civicmedia.us or wherever you enjoy listening to your podcasts.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Highs around 38 this afternoon. Under overcast skies, southwesterly winds 5 to 10 miles an hour. Chance for snow tonight, 27. Cloudy skies expected. Cloudy again tomorrow. Chance for scattered rain showers. Highs level off around 38. Upper 30s Wednesday and Thursday, with a chance for scattered showers Thursday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 30 degrees.
The Shaw 101 FM, Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
When I was a little bitty boy, my grandmother bought me a cute little toy. Silver bells hanging on a string. She told me it was my ding-a-ling-a-ling-o.
Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. Thank you for joining us during the lunch hour. As always, join the conversation, 844-967-2789. And a reminder, if you like our show, tell your friends.
Spread the word.
Spread the word. We are a growing show on a growing network of radio stations, and we can always use your help if you are an evangelist for us to tell more people that we're here every day. Monday through Friday. And follow us on social media, As Goes Wisconsin, and help us help you by getting more people to watch us. Good choice.
Why, thank you.
Both you hit both boxes as far as being topical for what we're going to talk about this segment, and also Christmassy.
Yes.
So I don't even know where to start on this. Were you following this on Friday night, James?
I was.
So you could maybe set it up better. I'll set up how my experience of how this went down. So we were out for the Third Ward Christmas lighting Friday night with friends. But of course, because I'm addicted to my phone, I passively was seeing tweets from Elon saying we're like, there was this big hype for a Friday night drop of the Twitter files.
Bombshell.
You know. Cue X-Files music. Dun, dun, dun. And then as I kind of passively checked throughout the evening, there were certain people who seemed very vindicated, and there were certain people who were like, we already knew all of this. And since you followed much more closely, what did you find out?
So Twitter, in conjunction with a journalist called Matt Tabibi.
Tabby?
Tabby.
I think it's T-A... So this is a journalist who, I think up until what I was reading, up until this kind of Friday night dump, was very respected. I mean, he has his own Substack. He has almost a million followers on Twitter, and he's a journalist. He's a reporter, investigative journalist. And somehow he got roped into being the deliverer of how, during the 2020 election, Hunter Biden and some stories and tweets and posts about him were handled by Twitter employees as far as content moderation and censoring of pornographic posts.
Right.
So go ahead.
So Tabibi, again, in conjunction with Twitter and following whatever parameters Twitter put on him, looked over these internal discussions about getting these pictures of Hunter Biden's schmeckle basically squashed. Now, Hunter Biden isn't a candidate.
He's not an elected official.
He's never been an elected official, nor a candidate. And apparently the Trump administration had done some similar things in reaching out to Twitter, asking them to squash other things.
Well, it sounds like in general, for people who work on campaigns and are career, you know, campaign managers or involved, and since the advent of social media, and I'm sure even prior to that, with the media in general, the conversations that happen between the people who are giving the news, whether that's reporting on it or being a platform for it to be reported on or things tweeted about, there is conversations that happen as far as, you know, negotiating what gets printed, what gets posted, what gets taken down. And this is not new as far as, you know, anyone who's ever watched, you know, the morning show on Apple, as far as if I give you a bigger story, will you kill this one and all of that. And so basically what it turned out was the tweet that got the most retweets was an internal email of the Biden campaign listing off different tweets that were mostly pornography, basically, as far as naked pictures of sexual acts and stuff like that, to a Twitter employee, and the Twitter employee writing back handled. And that was the big gotcha moment, to which Elon Musk said this is a violation of First Amendment rights, which, once again, we're back to the point of the First Amendment protects you from going to jail.
For speaking out against the government.
Yes. And it does not protect you or it give you the ability to post whatever you want on the internet. That is still left up to the platforms to decide how much content moderation they want to execute. If they want to, you know, their charter is to create an online platform that people want to be a part of. And so for their advertisers, for their majority of their users, do you want to scroll through and see unsolicited dick pics? I think most of us would not.
There's actually
laws that says we do not want this, and you can be charged for doing that.
Unless you follow Brett Favre. Sorry, I just had to throw that out there. From what I understand, Twitter is still a privately held company, is it not?
It's even more of a privately held company now, because before, at least, it was a public company, and now it's privately held by Elon.
And when this happened, these Hunter Biden picks, now President Biden had not yet been elected president.
No.
So this was not the Biden administration doing this. This was the Biden campaign doing this.
Yes, which are separate. Which in all of campaign for people who are current, take a local example. So the team that was working for the governor, Tony Evers, in his office at the Capitol, was separate from the people who were working on his campaign. So for elected officials, there are campaign laws that divide those two. And so you have your on-premise job that you are getting paid for that has nothing to do with campaigning. And then you have your team that is in charge of campaigning. And so, yes, it was the Biden campaign. He was not president. And to sum it up nicely, as far as what Tim Miller,
such a good piece
for The Bulwark, he was such a good writer. But his title for his piece on this is, "No, you do not have a constitutional right to post Hunter Biden's dick pic on Twitter." And I think that kind of sums up what this whole hullabaloo on Friday night on Twitter was. Which just is driving more people to be like, what am I doing here? Just, you know, the addiction to that bird app.
The story just kind of went limp.
And on that note, we're taking a break.
We saw you playing with you.
The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK, 540 AM, Waukesha's only news talk station.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
So all you folks out there, if you haven't registered to vote, register to vote. Get ready to vote. There are so many things on the ballot this November, at our freedom, our liberty, and our way of life. But we'll get to all of that this evening.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m. on the Shaw 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM.
Here's today's STEM tip. Don't throw out that old plastic bottle. Repurpose it by turning it into an awesome terrarium. Just fill it with sand, pebbles, soil, and your favorite plant. It'll grow sealed right in its own ecosystem. Learn more at Chic.
I'm Ed Donahue with an AP News Minute. Russia says a new EU $60 a barrel price cap on oil will not hurt them in the war in Ukraine.
Eurasia analyst Chris Weefer tells the Associated Press,
"Do not. Everybody got to vote. Have your voices heard. That's what I'm telling you right to do right now. Should it come rain, sun, or shine."
His opponent is the incumbent Democrat Raphael Warnock.
Herschel Walker was an amazing running back. And he's going to need those skills because come Tuesday, the people of Georgia are going to send him running back to Texas.
Warnock led Walker by about 37,000 votes out of almost 4 million cast in the November general election. AP VoteCast, a survey of more than 3,200 voters in the state, showed Warnock won 90% of black voters. Walker won 68% of white voters. Both men have common upbringings in the Deep South in the wake of the Civil Rights Movement and would make history as the first black person elected from Georgia to a full Senate.
We tried Dynavite Nutritional Supplement, and after a couple of weeks, we noticed a big difference. Our little Gizmo's coat was shinier, and there was a lot less scratching and shedding.
My dog smelled and scratched constantly. We bathed and sprayed her, took her to the vet, but no results. Now, a little Dynavite in her food helps Bella keep her beautiful coat with no scratching or smell.
Happier, healthier with every bite. Over a million pets helped with Dynavite.
Looking for the perfect gift? Get them a shirt from Untuckit. Untuckit shirts are designed to be worn untucked. They're the easiest way to keep him looking sharp and feeling comfortable. You can't go wrong with their super soft flannels, wrinkle-free shirts, performance shirts with stretch, and cozy sweaters that are all perfect for right now. They even have a line for her. Find the perfect gift for every guy on your list at one of 80-plus Untuckit stores or at Untuckit.com. Untuckit, shirts designed to be worn.
For Civic Media, I'm Terry Bell with this news. The former Milwaukee Election Commission deputy director is free after posting bail at her initial court appearance Friday. Kimberly Zapata is pleading not guilty to three misdemeanor counts of lying in order to obtain an absentee ballot. She's also charged with misconduct in public office. That's a felony. Zapata says she was trying to point out how easy she believes it is to falsify military absentee ballots. Wisconsin gas prices are falling. AAA reports the statewide average for regular was $3.07 a gallon on Friday. That's about 60 cents lower than a month ago. Some stations are selling gas for less than $3 a gallon. Experts are predicting prices will go even lower this week. In sports, the Bucks are at Orlando tonight. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
Last week, just like we always talked about, because you were so excited.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. No matter where you're listening to us, across the Civic Media Network or on the Civic Media app, thank you for tuning in during your lunch hour. If you missed any of today's show, you can always listen to the podcast, which you can find at asgoeswisconsin.com or wherever you find podcasts. So last week, I bookmarked this because I knew that I wanted to take time to read it. But Natalie Eilbert, who published a story that she's been working on for since June, that looks into the fact that minors in Wisconsin need approval for physical and mental care and basically don't have any recourse if their parents refuse. And I think for a lot of us who have very loving parents, the situation that arises where your parents wouldn't want what's best for you or to provide care doesn't always seem top of mind, but there are a lot of people who are under 18 who that is not the case for in Wisconsin. And she highlights a lot of those stories, both the specific ones and larger trends. And so thank you so much for joining us to talk about this today, Natalie.
Thanks so much for having me, Kristen.
Let's just summarize kind of the bigger issue right now that you found and what prompted you to look into this further.
Yeah. So It kind of fell into my lap last year when I was interviewing House of Hope, which is a shelter, a homeless shelter and support program support place up in Green Bay. And Beth Hudak, who works for House of Hope, mentioned the frustrations she's experienced with trying to get homeless unaccompanied youth the care that they need. And what it means to be unaccompanied is your parent or legal guardian isn't in the picture. That could be a result of their being homeless themselves. They're incarcerated. You fled home because of it being unsafe, or you were kicked out. With these minors in particular, if something happens to them, they just don't have any recourse, whether it's trying to seek a prescription, get an x-ray done on a broken bone, you know, have something fixed that they need fixed, like a broken leg, or, you know, access to a therapist for the years and years of trauma they've experienced. All of those under Wisconsin law require a signature from a parent or legal guardian. And again, sometimes that's really difficult for, you know, doctors and hospitals providers to obtain. Sometimes it's just, you know, the parent or legal guardian refuses to sign the document that would give consent to providers taking care of these minors. So that's how I got involved, because I went into it with skepticism. I didn't think this is possible, that, you know, kids could experience such neglect from both their parents and then surrounding systems. But what I learned from talking to young people is indeed there are these really dangerous barriers to care.
And I think, because I want to break this down a little bit further as far as the estimated number of minors experiencing homelessness, and we could walk through a little bit more of the different definitions, but the homelessness of minors in Wisconsin alone is potentially approaching 20,000. Because there's at least in your article, it said the last kind of like hard number was from 2019, 2020, which obviously was when everything started to get upended with COVID. And that was 17,000. But estimates now said it could be up to 20, which is...
That's right.
It's an enormous number for a fairly small state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that it is surprising until we think about what homelessness means. It's not always living in a tent on the street, although that does happen. These are kids who are couch hopping. They're what's called doubling up. They're living with families. They're, you know, in and out of homeless shelters. There's just so many different ways that someone can be homeless, whether they have a roof over their head or not. Mm-hmm. If they don't have consistent care at home, if they don't have a home to return to, if they don't have a reliable adult in their lives or a legal guardian, their whole life can be so easily upended.
And so that, I think, is sometimes a situation as far as separating out the definitions, because I think for a lot of us, sometimes when we think of homelessness, we think of people living on the streets, whether it's adults or minors. And one of the things I think is important is even reframing the definition or using things as adjectives versus nouns, and saying someone who's experiencing homelessness, because it is sometimes they're couch hopping, they're living in a car, they have a spot until they don't have a spot. And so is that what you found more of as far as the minors between, I think, the House of Hope Project 1649 and different homes that are trying to be a safe space for minors who are trying to get out of a bad situation at their house, but don't have, let alone the legal knowledge of what is available to them, but even, you know, the wherewithal is being a 16-year-old trying to figure this all out.
Yeah, and an important distinction is that a lot of most, I would say a majority of homeless shelters in Wisconsin don't have licensing to take care of kids younger than 17. There's only two in the state that will even accept 0 to 17-year-olds. And that, you know, a lot of places like Project 1649 are working to change that. Though right now they can only shelter young people between the ages of 17 and 21. I believe that's the number. But so there's a lot of limitations for who can find shelter and what's legally possible. I know that, you know, a lot of young people who are homeless have parents who are extremely young too. So their House of Hope is one of the few places that accepts teenage mothers who are homeless. Mm-hmm. And that's a whole other situation too. But yeah, it's all, it's a big mess right now when it comes to taking care of young people.
Well, we're talking to Natalie Eilbert, who is a mental health reporter for the USA Today Network in central Wisconsin, and about her piece that she that was published last week on the lack of recourse for minors who need care but don't have a parental unit to sign off. Because in Wisconsin, you need your parents to agree for you to receive both physical and mental health care. And so I guess, not that I would imagine to know much about the you know, child health services system and when it's foster care and the state getting involved, but it feels like there's a negligence with at least one of the stories you wrote about in your piece is a young woman who had a broken leg and her father refusing her to get care. And the long-term ramifications that will happen from that, as far as her leg not healing correctly, but truly the doctor's hands in that case are tied. And I guess my question is, how is that not negligence? How is that something that the state doesn't end up getting involved in?
It's so complicated. So one way to think about this is from the perspective of Wisconsin law. It's completely legal. There aren't laws that would say neglecting to sign that type of paperwork is abuse. Of course it is. It can be. But that has to go through a bunch of different people, right? Like if the CPS, Child Protective Services, get involved at that point, a lot of kids actually don't want to have their parents in the system. They don't want to be in the system. You know, it's a question of what can, if the parent or legal guardian refuses to get care for this person, to take care of them, who's responsible? There's no one who can say, that can stand up and say, I will do it. I mean, there are cases where people, like, you know, doctors may decide, you know, I want to take care of this person anyway, and they'll reach out and do the proper, take the proper steps, but it may not be in their control. Hospitals right now are really at overcapacity. It's really hard to keep everything straight. And a lot of times it's a difficult calculus for doctors to get involved in something that is, again, technically legal.
Natalie, I just want to clarify so I can wrap my head around this. So an abusive parent could dislocate their child's arm and then elect not to have that treated. And unless Child Protective Services is called in by someone, that's fine.
I wouldn't say fine. You know, I don't know the extent to which someone, I mean, that is abuse. That is physical abuse. So if someone actively breaks the arm of their child, that, you know, police may get involved with that. And then it's not in the hands of doctors anymore. There are legal issues involved with this. I imagine that a doctor may feel obligated to make a phone call, but it doesn't always happen, as in the case of this one girl who, because her father didn't sign, she had to go home and the doctors felt terrible. I think she was taken care of by Project 1649. You know, they were able to do what they could for her. They worked with case managers, they worked with, they confided goal, but it's really complicated. And again, not everyone wants to, you know, wants those charges pressed. People don't want to be put into the system, because once you're in the system, it's really hard to get out of it. So it's more complicated than simply having, you know, CPS intervene. It's more complicated than simply having a parent reported for child neglect. There's a lot of other steps that are going on here.
This was the quote that I pulled out that I feel like is kind of the crux of what the story is. And so it's a story that serves as a metaphor for Wisconsin's current medical system where minors are concerned. Not meeting the medical needs of young people can lead to permanent damage, whether the issue at play is as visible as a broken leg or as invisible as mental health disorders. Because that was one of the other stories you featured as part of the report, is not only access to a therapist, but access to meds that are needed. And really the ability to, whatever the mental disorder or condition that you're trying to live with as a young person, knowing that you need that and still needing your parents to sign off on it, and how much long-term damage that can create.
Yeah. And, you know, that brings to mind the story of Desi, who's the main character in some ways of this tale. If you look at that case, it has all the ingredients of neglect, right, and abuse. And yet still, just to answer your question a little bit farther, Jane, that father still has rights to her medical care, even though he has a huge, like a staggering police record, even though he has been reported to the police before and Desi was the only one seemingly acting like an adult, he still can sign off on her care. You know, she told me that she recently, in my last phone call with her, she actually had broken or strained her wrist, and she was just taking care of it herself, because the alternative is she has to contact her father again. And when you've been abused by somebody, you don't want them in your life, and she doesn't want him in her life. So she's willing to, you know, elevate her arm and do what she needs to do.
All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break, but still have you come back and talk more about what resources are available and what legislation has been even proposed to amend this. Our guest is Natalie Eilbert, who is a mental health reporter with USA Today Network Central Wisconsin. Stay with us. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Because you said forever, now I drive alone past your street. Yeah, you said forever, now I drive.
Women hear a lot about self-care these days. Advice on ways to relax, exercise, eat healthy, and more. Those are all great. But one of the most important self-care steps we can take is making sure we're financially secure later in life. That means saving money for retirement. It's never too late to start. And it's the kind of self-care that brings peace of mind that lasts. For small steps you can take to save for retirement, visit WeSaySaveIt.org. That's WeSaySaveIt.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
Hey, this is Matt from Design Garden. Remember when the internet was new? Back then you had to leave your house to start a business. Companies used to pay programmers bags of cash to get online. Now, small businesses can get online with a Facebook business page, or Squarespace, or Google My Business, or WordPress. But which tools should you use? Can you afford to go down the wrong path? Design Garden uses modern tools to build your website the right way. Find us online at design.garden. Again, that's design.garden.
I asked what kind of family she wanted. She said, a family like yours.
Learn more about adopting a teen at AdoptUSKids.org. You can't imagine the reward. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Weather in a Moment brought to you by Wishkosh, providing technical assistance to workers, help with OSHA contract language, referrals to legal and health professionals, and assistance on safety and health. Call 414-870-3060. That's 414-870-3060.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Highs around 38 this afternoon. Under overcast skies, southwesterly winds 5 to 10 miles an hour. Chance for snow tonight, 27. Cloudy skies expected. Cloudy again tomorrow. Chance for scattered rain showers. Ice level off around 38. Upper 30s Wednesday and Thursday, with a chance for scattered showers Thursday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 30 degrees.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Big Bend to Menominee Falls. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
What would you think if I sang out a tune? Would you stand up and walk out on me? Lend me your ears and I'll sing you a song, and I'll try not to sing out of key.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. Our guest this half hour is Natalie Eilbert, who is a mental health reporter for USA Today Central Wisconsin. And we were talking about her fantastic piece that was published last week, talking about that in Wisconsin, minors need approval for physical and mental care from their adult, their parents. And for a lot of minors, that is detrimental. And there is not a lot of recourse for them to be able to get the care that they need if they are in a situation where their parent is not the parent that many of us have as far as wanting what's best for us. And so as you've been researching this, what was the background? Because we're one of 16 states that this is the how our laws are set up to protect, I imagine, minors. And so what is the argument for this law?
Yeah, so there's a bunch of reasons why. And I can't speak to the other 15 states, but in Wisconsin, there is this law, Defense of Infancy. And Defense of Infancy has really good intentions. You don't want a 15-year-old signing a credit card contract and then suddenly their credit is messed up. And, you know, that's a really great example of why you would want to intervene as a parent. But like any law, there's a lot of hubris in this, because once you prevent a minor from signing a contract, they can't open a bank account, which is really harmful if you are on your own and you don't have anybody. You can't sign medical records, as we were talking about. It's really hard to, you know, get any kind of independent stability if you are unable to sign a contract. I mean, think about all the ways that you sign contracts in a given day, and then realize if you couldn't sign that, you'd be in trouble, right? Mm-hmm. So these are the limits if a kid is, or a minor is experienced, or they don't know who their legal guardian is at some point. You know, they've been in the system, they've been thrown around. A lot of kids have been couch surfing for so long because of negligent parents or legal guardians that, you know, when it comes time to get the signature they need, they have no idea who it is they even need to reach out to. So that becomes a really huge problem when you're desperate for care.
And so has there been legislation, or is there anyone in our state legislature who is sponsoring, proposing amendments to this, or where are we as far as, it sounds like, as far as what I interpreted from your report, the only recourse to this problem is a legal one, is actually changing the laws.
Yeah, that's a way. Yeah, that's I think the biggest thing to get over. This would be a huge hurdle that would no longer be there. You know, in 2019, House of Hope, who we've been talking about, the organization was able to pass Act 22, which allowed 17-year-olds to be admitted to adult homeless shelters. That allows for that specific group to get they can go into a homeless shelter and volunteer to be admitted, and they're given all the treatment of an adult who is experiencing homelessness. But because of the law, they still can't access medical bills medical autonomy in general. So one of the laws that was proposed was a safe harbor law. And this was, and safe harbor means essentially that those who are experiencing sex trafficking, victims of sex trafficking, aren't treated as criminals in the adult or juvenile courts. We know that sex traffickers are, stalking or finding, they're finding young people and they're taking them and they're forcing them to do things against their will. And if law enforcement intervenes, that is when they're treated like adults. It's when they commit a crime. In 2020, the safe harbor law to amend this criminal act died in committee. So this was supposed to take away this discipline or punitive part of what this victim is experiencing. Without this amendment, a lot of victims of sex trafficking don't come forward because they don't want to face the legal repercussions. They get trapped in a cycle. And then the other law right now that died in committee, or proposal that died in committee, I should say, would have allowed the window of consent in Wisconsin to reflect the federal window of consent when it comes to getting kids into a homeless shelter. So children and adolescents who are under 17 right now in Wisconsin, if they end up in a homeless shelter and that shelter is licensed to take them, they have to get consent of the parent or legal guardian. And a lot of times it isn't because the parent is neglectful, it's that they're homeless themselves. Mm-hmm. So trying to track down where this parent or legal guardian is can take more than 12 hours. Federal consent windows have this at 72 hours. So, if we can't find, the parent to consent or the legal guardian to consent to a child or adolescent being at a homeless shelter, they essentially get kicked out. So that's another thing that can be done. That bill also, or that proposal also died in committee. So both of those things happened in 2020, which makes sense because, I mean, there was the pandemic and there was a lot going on. But
there wasn't a lot of work that year.
Yeah. So that's definitely something that, people can make, be aware of, is that if you talk to your representative, you can make sure that these bills are put forth again. But, the other thing that people can do is to say, we need to change this we need to get rid of this defense of infancy law or revise it so that children and adolescents can obtain their own medical rights if they need it, if they have no other choice.
Well, thank you so much for your reporting on this. It's so important, and it seems like you've started a conversation for more people to know about this, talk about this, and actually look for solutions for these minors and having them have more autonomy. So, Natalie Eilbert, thank you so much for joining us today. She is a mental health reporter for USA Today Network, Central Wisconsin, and we'll have you back soon. All right, we'll take one break.
¿Te tiene agobiado tu trabajo? ¿Sueñas con una carrera profesional donde puedas ganar más dinero y te sientas apreciado? Si tu respuesta es afirmativa, entonces Sigma Castings, una división de Sigma Engineered Solutions en Marquesan y Jackson, es tu respuesta. son más que una empresa. Son una familia de expertos dedicados que abarcan continentes. Te harán sentir apreciado de muchas maneras. Por ejemplo, el nivel básico de pago es de $18 por hora con revisiones periódicas de rendimiento. Después de los primeros 90 días de empleo, tendrás derecho a 80 horas de vacaciones más 11 feriados pagados. Aún más, ganarías un bono de $2,000 por permanecer en tu puesto. Te ofrecen un paquete de beneficios robusto, con primas bajas y excelente cobertura, y su plan de retiro 401k te va a impresionar. Se está contratando ahora para el primer turno, lunes a viernes, de 5 de la mañana a 2 de la tarde. Empieza tu nueva carrera ya con Sigma Castings en Murchison y Jackson. Encuéntralos en Indeed o llama a 920-260-8560 y levántate en la mañana feliz de ir al trabajo.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.